This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Justin, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome to Utopia.
Hey everybody, welcome in. It is a midweek edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. This is the Thursday guest episode a day early because this is a different kind of week. It's draft week and the draft is on Thursday. Day one of the draft is Thursday. And I want to make sure if we're going to do day one of the draft, if we're going to talk about the draft this weekend, then I got to go get the best. And we're going to have John Harris joining us here in just a minute. So I wanted to do this on Wednesday so that you guys would have a full 24-hour plus run up to the draft to be able to listen to this podcast. So appreciate everybody tuning in, subscribing. The podcast continues to grow. Subscribe, rate, and review. Those are the three magic words. If you know where you're finding this pod, or if you're finding this podcast but you're not subscribed to it, give it a hit on the old subscribe button. I don't know what's going on. If you're watching on the stream right here, there's like sun shining through the window. There's a weird streak over my shoulder. Maybe I'm dead. Who knows? Appreciate everybody downloading and subscribing and telling a friend about the podcast. And when you give us a rating and a review of the podcast, it really helps as well. I guess I should get the introductions out of the way. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. mornings on Sports Radio 610. And this is undoubtedly one of the most fun weeks or weekends of the year. In the last 2 years, it's proven to be franchise changing for the Texans, particularly last year. This year may be a little different, just maybe filling in some holes, but let's talk to the man who knows the most about all this good draft stuff here. My good friend, my first ever co-host in this crazy radio journey that we've been on. And he, of course, is the sideline reporter for the Houston Texans and the founder of footballtakeover.com, which is an awesome website year round, but especially for the next few days. Give it a follow, give it a subscribe. John Harris, the great John Harris, joining me. Johnny, how we feeling, man? How we feeling?
Doing pretty well. You know, we had our uniform review party last night. So I was, and I'm going somewhere with this. So I went, Mark said, you know, I'm going to wear a jacket. He's not going to knot up. He's going to wear a jacket. I'm like, okay, I got to go find a jacket. So I go in my closet. I'm going through the jackets and I'm kind of going through. I feel something in one of my jackets. I'm like, oh, I left something in the jacket pocket. Man, what the heck is, what is that? I can't really tell. I found this.
From last year, huh?
From last year. Had Dude. Not worn that jacket since last year, and I found this. And I thought, it's Thursday, April 27th, and as I'm looking at it, I'm like, this thing changed all of our lives.
Yeah, man.
It changed everyone's life. In one year's time, where this whole thing has gone for the Texans, it's unbelievable. And I know you can't trace it back to one moment when they do the 30 for 30 of the America's game and the Texans win a Super Bowl. There isn't going to be one moment, you know, Nick, you know, coming on board in 21, you know, the hiring, you know, going through all that crap and then hiring D'Amico, that's a big start. The signings of Dalton Schultz and Devin Singletary on the same day and little things here or there, you know, trading up for Nico in 21, all these kind of things. But that's the day that I think people are going to remember the most. And I just happened to pull that out of the pocket. And I literally just chuckled at first, like, oh, my God, I can't believe that I didn't know where this was. And then I looked at it again and I just realized, man, this whole thing has changed that much in a year, in less than a year's time.
It's
now here we are going into a draft in which we don't need any of these prospects, but hopefully they're going to come in and we want some of them to come in and provide some, you know, ample play, whether it's as starters. I don't think they're going to get a ton of starters in this, but they're going to get impact players. And I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, Johnny, of course, I want to talk about that and what they're going to do and what Nick's going to do. Is he going to move up? Is he going to move down? Positions, all that stuff. But as long as you're talking about the draft party and the party last night, we're recording this on a Wednesday, the uniform party last night, and there was more than a few Texans people, Mark Vandermeer, one of them, Greg Grissom, you know, where I had to ask all of them, like, man, can you believe that this is what's happening less than a year removed from drafting CJ Stroud and Will Anderson and that whole draft weekend. And it's crazy to think that in a year's time, the Texans had an event last night where they turned away five times the number of people as they were allowed to have into the event, I think is what the ratio Greg Grissom told me. It was about 5-1 ratio of people who wanted to go that could actually go, you know, that type of ratio. That the Texans are now creating things with so much FOMO that merch is flying off the shelves, you know, like it's really crazy to think about. And I think about draft night last year a lot, just that 10 minutes, man, where they drafted CJ Stroud, moved up and drafted Will Anderson. And then really the whole next day, that's just really like a documentary of following those two guys around everywhere they were going, including the press conference and everything else, and just how great it was. And full confession, I go back and watch that 10 minutes frequently. Like, I go back and watch it certainly during good times and bad during the season. I'll go back and watch it because it's a real reminder of just really how fortunate we are right now to be where we are. I mean, we came out of some muck, all of us did, you know, for those previous 3 years. I know you know that.
Yeah.
But the one video that I think really captured it all for me that I watched, and we're going to play some of the audio of this on Payne and Pendergast on Thursday on draft day, just to relive it, was the video. I'm sure you saw it. The team put it out where they whittled it down to 2 minutes of Nick, D'Amico, and Cal talking to CJ, Nick, D'Amico, and Cal talking to Will. And then I think it was just D'Amico they got talking to Tank. But I get chills just talking about it, like going back and hearing the conversations with all three of those guys, all three like very different conversations that they had because they're three very different leaders and individuals.
Yeah.
The best one is Tank, where D'Amico gets the phone and he goes, "Hey man," you know, classic D'Amico. You're like, "Hey man, how we feeling?" "It's on, coach. It's on."
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to run through a brick wall. And they talk about that with Tank. D'Amico talks about that a lot, like what an inspirational player he is. Man, you got from that 5 seconds of audio, I'm like, I get it, you know?
That there's so many things about that that night. So the draft starts at 7, but we have our all access show. So we'll have it again on Thursday. So we did our all access show, and last year DP was driving it. Miss DP a lot, but DP was driving it. Me and I'm trying to remember who we had on. I think Brevin Jordan we have on, and then I think we had McLean on. But the last person we had on was Greg Grissom. I don't know if Greg will remember this, but he looked at me when he got done and I was facing him like I'm facing the computer. And he said, "What do you think?" I can tell this now. I've said this story, I think, a few times. And I said, "I think it's Stroud." I went like this, "Stroud or Anderson?" Looking at me, he nodded towards Anderson and he goes, "That's it. I think that's the guy."
Yeah.
And I just went, "Okay." And I kicked myself because I used the wrong word. I used "or" instead of "and." I'd never thought that "and" would come through. But then when that all happens, interesting because the talk about Stroud from everybody, everybody was, you know, look, you know, we're still kind of kicking ourselves that we, you know, we beat the Colts because, you know, we really wanted Bryce, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, look, I think CJ's going to be just fine. But then it got to a point where even by the draft, even though I've been a big supporter of CJ, I'd gotten to the point where I'm like, they're not drafting him. You know, that whole, oh, by the way, have the letters S and 2 been mentioned at all in this draft process?
No, no. Seth and I talked about that yesterday. He killed the S 2, dude. He
just
killed it.
Crushed it. I mean, just crush it like a friggin' mosquito. And just, I love it. Anyways, I didn't even, you know, but I was excited. Once I heard the name CJ Stroud for us, I was like, oh man. And you're just feeling this excitement, this energy of, you know, the Texans just drafted a quarterback, and he's a good one. He is going to be really good, and I'm talking about it. And the last thing I said was, come sling at 7. And if I had any money in my account, I was going to go make a T-shirt for the draft that said, come sling at 7. But, you know, I'm broke, so away you go. But that was the last thing I said, and so we're just kind of feeling this excitement. And then I look over, and as we're kind of moving forward, I see Robert Hensley just go like this. He just does this. And he's got a smile on his face. And so Robert, during the draft, Robert handles and he's combing the web looking for what trade could happen, what could happen, what things are happening. And he puts the finger up and he gets kind of leans in to get all of our attention. He's got a smile on his face. And I went, oh gosh. And I remember Daniel Jeremiah had done a mock draft where he had the Texans moving up. And what also stuck with me was throughout the entire draft season, up until Jalen Carter's, you know, idiot move off the field. Mm-hmm. I had been playing around with the mock drafts to see how can I get two of the elite players? How can I get Bryce in a defensive player? How can I get CJ in one of the defensive players, Jalen Carter, Will Anderson? It was a 4-player draft in my estimation. Mm-hmm. How could the Texans get two of them? And I was like, man, this is kind of painful what I would have to give up, but I might do it. Then when Carter screwed up, I thought, well, maybe he'll fall to me at 12. I don't know if the Texans will look at somebody like that because of his issues. I don't know. And then I kind of left it alone because I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be really tough to do that, especially when there's just Will Anderson to go with one of the two quarterbacks. Thankfully, Nick never said never. He just went and got him. But just the stories that come out of that draft, I mean, I'll keep with me forever. I mean, Andre and I, there's a video Figgy puts out every now and again when he wants to show how excited he is about something. He puts out that video of me reacting with Andre when Will's name is called. And it was just, I chuckle at it. I didn't realize that Mark was taking that video. But, you know, I realized at the time, I kept thinking in my mind, this is the one that turns it around. I don't know if it's this year. I don't know if it's next year, but this is going to be the one that turns it around.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what kept sticking in my mind. Like, we'll come back to this one a lot. Doesn't mean that 2022, when you get Sting, we did Matt, you know, all that. It's just what you did with CJ and Will at the top, Tank in the third. You end up getting Henry a little bit later in the draft, who obviously contributed as well. So you just had that impact. You just threw the anvil down on everybody and continued to do it as you added players. And obviously this offseason will lead you to this draft on Thursday.
Yeah, Johnny, I don't know. I mean, I'll never say never about future years in the draft because, you know, that's a long time. But I just don't know that any team is ever going to land on a spot again where they'll be able to copycat the Houston Texans. It's a copycat league, as they say. Yep. And I'm sure there's – when they watch this Texan season play out and you watch not only how great a player CJ Stroud and Will Anderson are, but what great people they are and what great leaders both of them are and how much they love being here and all the gravitational pull and a positive aspect that they have on people and all those things. If I'm a GM for any of the other teams, I'm looking and going, how can we do that? How can we replicate that? And the fact of the matter is you've got to land on a spot where you've got the draft capital to do it. I mean, that's where the Deshaun trade, to me, the biggest thing that came out of the Deshaun trade was it gave you the flexibility and the capital to go get Will Anderson. Absolutely. That is the biggest thing that came out of it. I don't know that a team is ever going to land on a spot again where they, one, have the capability of doing it, two, have the balls to do it. That matters.
Yep.
And three, have a draft where you've got two guys like that at the tippy top of it. I mean, just look at this draft. Like, theoretically, Chicago is in a position to do something similar to that, right? Just in terms of the draft capital. And I think in terms of, like, the chutzpah also, like, Ryan Poles isn't afraid to make deals. Just ask him. They've got the CJ-ish pick. It's the first pick to get the quarterback, and then they've got the ninth pick, which if there was a Will Anderson in this draft, they've got Carolina's two next year that they could trade to go move up from 9 to 3 or something. But that guy doesn't exist, as you've pointed out many times, both on the radio and when you've come on the podcast with me, is that in retrospect, what makes that Will Anderson trade so genius when everybody was panning it is the fact that Nick probably looked at a 2-year window and said, this guy doesn't exist, another one of him in this draft or the next draft.
And I didn't think that was all that hard to figure out. I mean, when the trade was made, and I think it speaks to a couple of things, Sean, because it wasn't vitriol, but it was bordering on such from a lot of people. Like, why would you give up next year's pick? That's going to be a top 5 pick. Why are you giving that pick up? What are you doing? And Drew said something on our In the Lab podcast, HoustonTexans.com. You can check out. I thought it was very interesting. He said that he ran into a coach that was truly and totally all in on the thought that adding Will Anderson to CJ Stroud to what already was on the roster was going to give us a pick that was lower than the Browns. They believed wholeheartedly that Will Anderson Jr. and CJ Stroud coming in were going to change the organization to a point that it was going to be a lower pick. And that's exactly what happened. And obviously it took the playoff game to put us in that particular spot, but it put us in that particular spot. So but the other side of that too is all this gets narratives in media, just everybody piles on. Everybody gets on social media, pile on. Yeah. A year ago at this time, what were we doing right? We were starting to do things right, but nationally we still were this joke that we were the 3 years. So they looked at it and said, oh my God, he's making it. What if Nick this year 42, 59, 86, and next year's first and moves up to number 5 and goes and gets Marvin Harrison Jr. or whatever. It'll be just complete, whoa, what's he doing? This is great. Oh, my God, she's got the balls. Look at this. A year ago at that time, the narrative was not that. The narrative was not, oh, look at him. He's ballsy. He's this. He's always been that way. He's always been aggressive. But at some point, the narrative starts changing, especially when you start winning a little bit.
Yeah.
And now it's hottest thing in the NFL since sliced bread, which always worries me a little bit, as you guys talk about winning the offseason. It's not something you really want to do. And I said that to Nick the other day, like 3 feet from him, and I thought he was going to slug me. I was joking, and he knew I was joking, but he still wanted to slug me. But I think that's also what this draft does too. You know, it gives them an opportunity to say, okay, did we miss anything with our offseason acquisitions? Is there anything that we're out of line with that we don't feel great about now that we've seen some of these guys in conditioning? You know, I always think that's a big factor too. You get to see some of these additions when they come in for conditioning. Okay, how do we feel about this? Boy, this guy's bigger and more explosive than we thought. I think this is going to turn out well. Or, you know what? This guy's kind of a fat POS. I don't know why we did this. Oh my gosh, we got to do. So I think that can kind of change things along the way. Maybe not your top pick, but maybe along the way, it maybe changes the priority of a pick. So we just have changed the narrative. And it showed at that draft party, because I said to somebody at the draft party, I said, look around. This crowd is bigger than any of the COVID crowds we had in 2020, and some of the crowds we had in 21 and 22.
Yeah.
But then, the lines everywhere to get merch. I mean, it's just – it's great, great to see. And I know you and I, you know, we do different Texans things, but there are some things that just – like you doing a post-game show, you are the voice of just the vitriol. You get to hear the vitriol from the fans when we're 3-13-1 and we lose and we beat the Colts, but have we lost to the Colts sort of thing, you know? And then it starts turning around.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, you know what? And I've thought about this a lot, Shawnee. It's like, I don't want to get to that point where I'm like, okay, oh, I'm so worried about expectation. You know what? Screw that, man. We went through 3 years of hell.
Yeah,
just going to live our best football life through this team, man, and through these players, because I believe in what they're doing. And I believe in Nick and D'Amico and what Cal and Hannah have done and the narrative that's changed on them and how this organization is run and what it looks like. It's night and day different, and I'm going to celebrate the hell out of it.
Yeah, no, enjoy every day of it, man, for sure. And you've certainly seen it up close. So it's really great to experience and see. So let's talk about this draft. And so right now, as we sit, the Texans are sitting at 42, 59, 86 on day 2. And then they've got 2/4, 2/6, and 2/7. This is all subject to change, but my guess is it is subject to change in the draft. I think the hay is in the barn probably. Those where the Texans sit right now, those aren't picks, unless it is for a big move up or something like that. These are picks that are, in all likelihood, these are wait to see how the board falls kind of fixed picks. So, Johnny, that's what I want to ask you out of the chute is, you do mock drafts on footballtakeover.com. You play this thing in your head constantly, I'm sure, how this draft goes. What's the scenario of this draft unfolding that you think is most likely in terms of the Texans and what Nick decides to do, whether it's move up, move back? Like when you played it through, you know, the 10,000 simulations in that computer brain of yours right there, what do you think is the most likely scenario, not necessarily specific player, but just in terms of how Nick and D'Amico attack the second round of this draft?
I think they're going to be very cognizant of the quarterbacks, wide receivers, and the tackles, and really hoping that there is a run on all of them. Trading up for tackles, they're going to get wide receivers. I talked to my buddy Sal Capaccio, sideline reporter of the Bills, and he's like, don't be surprised. The Bills kind of go all in to go up and get one of those top three guys, top three wide receivers.
Yeah.
And then what that's gonna do to the draft, because now the Bills are up there, they're taking a wide receiver, so it's pushing guys down the board. And look, those three positions we just named, quarterback, we're good. Wide receiver, I mean, your top three might be the best trio in the league, so I don't think you have to go get one of those three. But again, you got to keep one thing in mind with them, and you've talked about this. There's a chance that after 2024, Nico and Diggs are gone. There's a chance for that. I hope not, but there's a chance for that. And then offensive tackle, I mean, look, I'm partial to Laramie. I've been partial to Laramie for a long time, all the way back to his days at Ole Miss. He was number one on my Harris 100. I love the guy. I think he's one of the best left tackles in the league. You got to hope that Titus comes back healthy. If Charlie is relatively healthy, those should be your tackles. You don't really have a big push for any of the big tackles in this draft. So those three positions, you want as many of them drafted as possible. Edges, pretty much where it goes next. Edges and corners. Now, you do need corners, and that I think is going to be one to watch, because I feel like Quinion Mitchell, Terrion Arnold's got a lot of love, even though I like Kool-Aid better than I like Terrion. It's just I've felt that way for a while. Nick Wiggins from Clemson. I don't know if Wiggins is quite a fit with us. I think he's probably more of a man, kind of a man-based corner, play more press just because he can run as well as he does. You know, Texans do a lot of mat stuff, so it ends up being man, but it's just a little different kind of way you play it. So, and plus Wiggins, I don't know, I've heard there's some kind of character off the field stuff. I don't know. You put stock into it or not, who knows? Kool-Aid, but then there's kind of that second tier of guys. Guy I like from Iowa State, TJ Tampa, Ennis Rakestraw. I know he came for a visit here. There's also Max Milton from Rutgers. Then beyond him, Andrew Phillips, DeCamrion Richardson from out of Mississippi State, who I like. Long, fast. He's got some things to clean up in his game. But, man, you talk about a guy that can go from 0 to 60 in a heartbeat, which you got to do at corner. That would be a guy that's interesting. But I think he's down the road. But I think that's where they're looking. Okay, let's take a look at these corners. Let's take a look at these corners and how the corners are, you know, coming off the board.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they start early. I've seen some mocks starting to put Mitchell in the top 10, some with Terrion Arnold in the top 10. So I think there are some corners they're probably resigned to think they're not going to be able to get at 42.
Mm-hmm.
But if those corners start getting pushed down, just all of them as a group start getting pushed down, I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, hey, one of these guys, we might, you know, Cooper DeJean from Iowa too. I think he's more a safety than a corner, but you draft him and you figure it out, honestly.
Yeah.
He is a hell of an athlete. So I don't mind like that thought process. Just letting it kind of play out. I think what teams are going to have to, with trade up possibilities in the first round, what they're going to have to measure. And I don't know that the Texans are going to be willing to do this, but I do think there are going to be teams that are going to wait for the Raiders, the Broncos, the Vikings, the Saints. If those four teams in particular aren't able to go up and get a quarterback or take a quarterback in the first round, they may want to get to that back end of the first round to go get a quarterback.
Mm.
And to do that, you might get a trade deal plus. So if the Texans are offering you, I don't know, just say a third, to go up a certain number of spots, you might be able to get a third plus a future second or third because they're going up for quarterback.
QB, yeah.
It's that much more valuable for them to get up there. And so maybe those teams kind of hold out and wait for that. Mm. And maybe they get a deal, maybe they don't. So I think there are going to be a number of things that are in play. But I do think cornerback will be one. And the other is just kind of monitoring the defensive tackle situation.
Yeah.
Because I think Byron Murphy's off the board. I think Jerzon Newton is going to end up being off the board. But if Newton – now, I'm not going to say Murphy. I don't think Murphy – Murphy, I think, is going to be off the board. But I think if Newton ends up kind of being pushed down, he gets in that 27, 28, 29 range for whatever reason, maybe they make some calls. Maybe they end up making some calls because there is a clear delineation to me between Byron Murphy, tier one, Newton, tier one slash two, and then everybody else. Now, mm-hmm. I like Fisk from Florida State. I love Fisk from Florida State. And 42, I would absolutely take him. That, to me, you know, he's got some short arms, but I don't worry about that. The guy's Energizer Bunny. He is mm-hmm. athletic as hell. And I think he would – I'd love him at the Senior Bowl because I talked to him for a little bit. And I asked him at the Senior Bowl, you know, was he working on some things? Like, was he working on some moves and trying some stuff out? And he's like, yeah. So I thought it was interesting because you don't see a lot of guys do that. Some guys just bull rush because it's like, I got to do something. But he was trying some different moves. And I was like, man, I appreciate that. He's a little older.
Yeah.
Six-year guy. He's treating it
like Verlander treats spring training, man.
Yes. And I like that because, I mean, when are you going to do it? You worked on a practice. So to me, Fisk at 42 makes all the sense in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But Jerzon Newton from Illinois would be a guy that could be very, very interesting in this defense. And maybe if he gets pushed down, 27, 28, 29, like I said, maybe that's when Nick makes a call and says, look, we thought Newton would be gone. He's still there. Something we want to do. The irony of all this, and I thought about this when I said this, was how much of his day two picks does he have to give up? Because is he going to kill our draft party on Thursday and Friday?
I know, man.
He's going to kill me, which I saw him in the hallway like probably a couple days after the Vikings trade. And I was popping out of the studio and he saw me. He goes, I'm sorry, I screwed up your draft party. I'm like, didn't bother me. We'll just move the draft party to Friday. And that's what we did. So I think that's kind of the way that I look at it, Sean. There'll be a lot of defense, a lot of offensive players off the board,
yeah.
Quarterbacks, wide receivers, offensive tackles, Bowers. They'll push defensive guys down the board. How far down the board does a guy like Newton get pushed where you entertain the opportunity or the chance to go up and go, do we want to do this? Is Newton that much better? And we get him, and then we get in the first round, we get an extra year with the fifth-year option. Let's do this. Now, obviously, with Newton, you got to make sure he's healthy. You know, he had the Jones fracture, injured his foot, so hasn't been able to work out and do those things. But it looks like he's going to be ready to go at training camp. So that's another thing you really have to consider with Newton. And if he does start to fall, you got to get your medical people involved. Like, hey, what are our thoughts on Newton? Is he going to be ready to go? What do we think about him? You know, we go up and get him and make this move. Is he going to be ready to play this year? Is he going to be ready to make an impact this year? So Newton would be the guy that I think from a defensive tackle standpoint. Corner, I kind of think it's Kool-Aid. If Kool-Aid mm-hmm. ends up moving down for whatever reason, I just feel like he's the guy. I asked Will Anderson about both Tarion and Kool-Aid. And Tarion, he was like, oh, that's my little bro. You know, I asked about Kool-Aid, and he just kind of shook his head for a couple of seconds. He goes, that guy can ball.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, that guy can ball. And I think that makes sense because Will played with him in 22. He was much better in 22 than 23. But he was also dealing with that foot injury that he played with all year long. So there's that. So that's kind of the way I look at it. The other question I've had is there a receiver – that you just drop everything and 42, like
yeah.
no matter what, 42's that's the spot.
Yeah.
And I feel like Ladd McConkey and Adonai Mitchell would be the two guys I might do that for.
Okay.
McConkey for sure.
Yeah.
Mitchell, I'm like, I don't know. But the reason why is McConkey would fit perfectly with Nico and Tank.
Oh.
And just in a rotation with Diggs.
Yeah.
There's so much you can do. He can be your true slot. I mean, there's a lot you can do with him.
No kidding. That's interesting. That's funny, the thing about Nick torpedoing day two. Nick's like an RA at a dorm in college, like catching us all with our beer. Like, oh, that party that you want to have on Thursday, that is over. Yeah. No, that party's over. And then he'd be coming in, swooping in, and all of a sudden he torpedoes day two. Don't do that. Nick, if you listen to the Utopia Football Podcast, please don't do that.
Please give us one pick on day three. Just give us one. If you trade 42 and 59, it's fine. If you go get a pick in the first round, but if you do that, you better be getting a stud at that point.
John, in some ways, I really like where the Texans are at because, one, they're not desperate to get first-round talent right now, and especially, as you point out, in a draft where it really feels like the positions where teams are going to be climbing over each other to go, yeah, these are positions the Texans probably aren't really attacking, certainly not in the top 15, 20 picks in the draft, whereas they, you know, when they were sitting there at 23 before. What do you make of – I like the fact that – they've got the ability. They don't pick until the early part of day two. So it really gives them an opportunity after round one to really kind of survey things. Like you said, like if there's a player that falls and he falls to the bottom, like falls out of the first round. Well, now they've got 24 hours to find out why the hell the dude fell out of the first round. Is there a benefit maybe to them kind of bunching that draft capital on day two, 42, 59, and 86? That you can kind of breathe a little bit, step back, take a look, assess, make deals, whatever it is you need to do.
It's like chapter one we just talked about. Chapter one, going up in the first round. Mm-hmm. I think like 1 to 10, is that going to happen? I think it's probably a 4. Mm. 3.5, 4. I don't think there's a high probability of that. I just don't think it's going to happen, which leads to chapter two, which you just talked about, which I think is more likely to happen. And I think the reason for that, you know, he mentioned, you know, we talked about T'Andre Sweat. These guys have done a lot of research, a ton of research. And but there things happen on draft night where you're like, this guy's available. We didn't think he was going to be available. Is there something we missed?
Yeah.
Or we have an absolute stamp of approval on this guy. And people are just missing the boat. We believe in this guy. We know other teams are not going to. So what night one, Thursday night's over, you get back in at 7 in the morning, you sit down, you go, okay, here's what we got on the board. I feel like start of round two is always the most exciting part of the draft because teams have had that overnight look. They've had that morning look. They've been making calls. They've been trading. There's a guy that they see that they didn't think was going to get there. Brian Branch last year with the Lions.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to say the Lions traded up to go get him. They saw him and like, what the hell? Go get Brian Branch. There were a lot of teams that ended up trading. I want to say the last year in particular, there were trades all over the place at the beginning of the top of the second round. And I think it's because of that. You see what players went. You kind of see how some of the teams are thinking and what they're doing and how many quarterbacks are on the board? Who's still left on the board? Which position? Quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle didn't have a run on it. Was there a defensive position that you didn't expect to have a run? Holy crap, this guy's on the board. Well, this guy's on the board because he's an idiot, has no football IQ. This guy's on the board because he's got 10 DWIs. This guy's on the board because he's a abuser in some way, shape, or form. Okay, those guys we're not going to touch. But you know what? We did not think Kool-Aid was going to be there. Do we need to go get him? Let's look at it. And that's the thing. You start looking at teams in front of you, but then as you look at those teams, you're like, hey, anybody could go trade and get up. But who went and got corners already? Who's got a corner need? Who could jump us? Who's got the trade capital? And you're examining all those things, and you're wondering, okay, what other players are in that pod? Could we just sit at 42? Are there – you know, five players that we have highlighted and targeted of those five. Let's watch the first 2-3 picks. If you still have those five, okay, we're good. But all of a sudden, you go three of them off the board right in a row, and you're like, dang, we might have to get up and go get one of our guys. So let's move up and go. I love that part of the second round. I love it. I wish we had pick 38. We could get up to 33, 34 if we needed to. You know, the Panthers have two picks. I think it's 33 and 39.
Yeah.
That might be a team, even though they need a lot of players, but you might be able to call them and say, hey, it's three spots. You move down to 42. We'll give you one of those extra six that we got, or you know, one of the fours, you give us back a six or something. I don't know. You figure it out, but you move up three spots and you get a guy that you have targeted. They get more draft capital and they only move down three spots. You know, maybe that's a team you highlight. But I just love that because I mean, the Panthers will pick at 33. I don't think they're going to move off of that. They might move 39. But then it gets really interesting. The Commanders have 36 and 40.
Mm-hmm.
So Are they interested in moving? You know, because in the end, you don't want 12 rookies.
Right.
You know, if you're a team, you don't want 12 rookies.
Yeah.
You'd like to have, would you rather have 12 rookies or rather have, you know, nine or 10 even more solid rookies than you were going to get if you had 12. So I'd be interested if the Commanders are going to end up doing something with that, those two particular picks. So the Texans have some spots to be thinking about moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of, I think more so the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
If Nix, Penix, Rattler, and I would expect Rattler to be there. But if those three are still on the board at the top of the second round, I think there are going to be teams just like going through hell and earth to go get one of those quarterbacks because they got to have a young quarterback. Broncos, Raiders, Vikings, those are the three teams. Saints, those are all teams that need a quarterback. The Saints, not as much as the others, but that Derek Carr end is coming very, very soon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I'm just glad it's not the Texans. You know, like it would be teams climbing over each other. We need to sit with our popcorn and watch them all climb over each other on night two of the draft. So, Johnny, last draft question for you, and then I want to ask you, the news just broke before you and I started recording about this Amon-Ra St. Brown contract extension.
Oh.
I don't know if you saw this. He got 4 years, $120 million, $77 million guaranteed. Yeah, I want to ask you about that because obviously the Texans, right, the Texans have wide receiver long-term business to take care of. So I want to ask you about that. And I'll double-check those numbers. I think that was a Schefter tweet that I saw. I'll double-check the numbers. But as far as day three goes of the draft, as we've pointed out several times in this conversation, 2 seconds and a third on day two, and then day three, 2/4, 2/6, and 2/7. And we know Nick loves to use those day three picks to maneuver around the second day more than anything else. He's done it in the third day a few times. He's moved around to get most of the guys they've drafted to some degree. Right. I think 18 of the 23 were drafted with spots that they didn't have going into the draft that night. They maneuvered around. So how much is this draft, this particular draft, affected by NIL, the lack of underclassmen coming out? I'm reading in a lot of places, but your opinion is the one I trust more than any. I'm reading in a lot of places how there's just a much bigger drop-off in talent that happens actually like during day three of this draft than many previous drafts we've seen. How much of that do you think factors into the strategy that Nick has by maybe that it becomes an even increased chance that those day three picks become currency on day two more than they are actual selections the Texans are going to use?
So I think 32 teams will look at what you just asked, Shawnee, 32 different ways because of where their team is right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think NIL transfer portal, I think all of that has had a massive, massive impact on this draft. I've talked to college people, talked to college coaches. One of my good friends in general, I've talked to just about this, and he's mentioned it. He said it point blank that because of the NIL and the portal, more players are going back to college, reducing the pool in some sense. The flip side of that is, what you're getting on day three is a little bit more polished player because that guy has played 4, 5, or even 6 years. Mm. You're getting guys that stuck around because they could get a little bit more NIL money, a little bit more opportunity in the transfer portal. They stuck around so they could get, and a lot of this has to do with quarterbacks. When I go back and I look at my – when I do in like May, early June, I start taking a look at the next class. I've already worked on it, but I really kind of dive in like the year before.
Yeah.
And so when I did that last year, my top quarterbacks included Riley Leonard, ended up going, you know, to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Gabriel ends up transferring from Oklahoma to Oregon. DJ Uiagalelei transfers from Oregon State to Florida State. It really hits with the quarterbacks because – it's now in day three, instead of having an opportunity to get one of those guys. Now, I think Leonard would have probably gone on day two if he were healthy. I think the other guys would be day three guys. But you would have an opportunity to get one of those two guys, you know, an Uiagalelei, a Gabriel, anybody else that I missed in the transfer portal. You would have that opportunity. But what's in the portal or what's in the draft right now, Sam Hartman, what did he do? Stayed an extra year by going to Notre Dame.
Yep.
You got Carter Bradley, transferred from Toledo, Gus Bradley's son, and then went to South Alabama, stayed a little bit extra. guys that have played a lot of football, that's quarterback, but I think it's across the board too, that you're going to get on day three. So you're going to get a little bit more experienced player. You might not have he might not be the talent that you might have gotten on day three, mm-hmm. because you only have like 50 underclassmen versus last years before. There's 1 year, it was like 120, 130 underclassmen. But now guys are looking at it going, here's a great example. Great example. In fact, I'm looking at him right now. Travion Henderson, Ohio State.
Yeah.
Travion Henderson to me would have been running back one for me. So Travion Henderson doesn't go in his draft. And it's funny because now next year is a draft for running backs. Holy smokes. It's a good draft. Quinshon Judkins with Henderson, Ohio State, freaking Ollie Gordon from Oklahoma State. I mean, yeah. it's an incredible year for running backs. So the point with all that is Henderson decides to go back to Ohio State. I'm shocked. He, to me, would have been a top 75 to 100 pick. So it's just one player. But what does that do? If Henderson's drafted, Dawson, it pushes guys that are in that, you know, down a little bit. Maybe Trey Benson gets pushed down because, oh, well, we got Henderson. We don't need, you know, Trey Benson. And all of a sudden, it's just kind of this domino effect. That's one guy.
Yeah.
Going to Ohio State, staying for another year. And running back's obviously a tricky position because of the beatdown, but it has an impact. The flip side of that is I think it helps better teams because team like the Texans,
yeah.
because what they're getting is a player that's been around for a while, a little bit older player, a little bit more mature player that can come in and contribute, understands to come in and contribute on special teams.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you're drafting all fifth and sixth year guys, you know, because you do want talent. You still want talent. But the talent gets pushed up, the experience gets pushed down, and that's what you may end up getting in day three is all of that. You might get a little bit more experience. So for the Texans, I like it. But if I'm a team like, I don't know, say the Commanders I mentioned earlier, you may not love it because you got to have some talent. And maybe there's not as much in supply. So maybe the Commanders, even with 36 and 40, maybe they move up a little bit so they're getting a higher quality player. So that might be a draft strategy, Sean, that some teams might get into. Like, hey, this is just not a draft where there's all that quality. Trade those seventh and sixth and move up. Get it done with that draft by the fifth round and see if you can get some teams that'll do that. So I think it's an interesting thought for sure. I've definitely had it, and I know it has an impact.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how Nick Caserio sees it. You know, that's going to be really interesting to see. Because it probably how you do that probably says to some degree how you feel about your overall roster. If he hangs on to those picks and he's picking guys that maybe have very little upside, but they're solid, they're experienced.
Yep.
You feel like you're filling in holes. Because I think about a lot of these guys that team sign, that the Texans sign, let's say, that are filling guys are one the going rate seems to be 1 year $3 million or 1 year. The Texans re-signed Neville Hewitt 1 year $4.2 million. Like that's the classic guy right there, right? Like he'll probably be in the league for another 5 or 6 years. He'll be signing 1 year deals, and that's really a lot of what roster filler is in this day and age. As the middle class in the NFL shrinks, you're finding those 1 year guys to fill in. I could see where that's one form of cap. Whereas the rookie contracts become a different form of cap management. Whereas at the upper tier, it's you have a rookie quarterback like CJ Stroud, and this allows you to go get Danielle Hunter and do all these other things.
Right.
What maybe these sixth and seventh round picks allow you to do is, okay, well, we don't have to give six guys each $4 million for 1 year deals. We can just go, we got to give them a little signing bonus for being a seventh round pick. But these are largely guys whose cap figures are going to stay in six figures for the entirety of the contract.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one other thing about that is, that's the philosophy I've always kind of thought about myself. You got to have the coach and the coaching staff to develop them.
Yeah.
And I think Nick knows he's got that. And I think DeMeco is very comfortable with the coaching staff to develop younger players that you might take in the seventh round of Brandon Hill from Pitt that comes in pretty polished. It's just, Nick mentioned him the other day. Brandon just got hurt in training camp, and you got to kind of got to start over in the second year. But you got an experienced 3 years at Pitt. Will go down special teams. The type of guy you want in the locker room, knows how to deal with adversity. And you're right. I think that is definitely for some teams a way to kind of manage your cap situation. Now it looks like Detroit Lions are going to have to manage the hell out of that cap situation.
Well, let's get to that, because I know you got a bunch of stuff you got to do today. Tomorrow is Christmas for you, and the last thing I want to do is plunder your Christmas Eve with hours and hours of conversation. But let's talk about this. This came down. This is Ian Rappaport who tweeted it, actually. Johnny tweeted this about 14 minutes before you and I started recording. Sources, the Lions have a deal for one of the top young talents, agreeing on an extension for wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown. 4 years, more than $120 million, with $77 million guaranteed, mentions his agents got the deal done. So now, without seeing, is this all new money or is this in addition to the final year? Like, this is, needless to say, this puts Amon-Ra St. Brown in a damn near tippy-top wide receiver tax bracket. So I think the immediate question that I have, when I was seeing rumors of Amon-Ra St. Brown getting 3 years, $75 million, I immediately retweeted and said, I'd give that to Nico. I'd give Nico 3 years, $75 million. A lot of people thought that was a little rich for Nico Collins, just given he hadn't had the 3 years of success that Amon-Ra St. Brown had, to which I would say, did you watch the previous two seasons before 2023? Like, what he was working with there? You know, like, it's not...
Right.
Even if C.J. Stroud throwing him the ball, what's your reaction to that contract for Amon-Ra St. Brown, and bring Nico Collins into that universe, if you will? Like, where does he fit this offseason in terms of how the Texans should be viewing him long term?
I mean, this deal, well, I mean, 3 for $75 million, I'm like, yeah, I might walk that deal over to Nico if he's in Alabama, but he's just down the hallway now. So, 4 years, 120. Good grief. That's it. Two things. Number one, okay, that it's sticker shock when you see it, but we do have to kind of change our, I don't want to say move the goalpost, but we got to change it a little bit, because the cap keeps going up an exorbitant amount every year.
Yeah.
So 4 years, 120 was 2 years ago, 4 years, 95 seemingly. Yeah. You know, inflation hits the NFL in different ways, I guess. But I think for St. Brown, he has been productive from day one. I think he is the emotional driver of that team and that offense. I think he, even though he's a Southern California kid, he oozes kind of Detroit toughness and grit and all of that. And he's always available. And that obviously is something that Nico wasn't the first couple of years. On top of, you know, he didn't have the greatest talent around him, and he didn't have CJ throwing the football. So the one thing I you know this, I always say with contracts is you're forecasting not what a guy did, but what we think this guy can end up doing. So the Lions look at that and say, Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to give us the exact same thing, and then some, he gave us the first 4 years. I think with Nico, it's kind of like we think what he gave us in 23, he's going to give us 24 and beyond. So I, you know, when I think about this and just kind of dive into it, and you're right, sometimes you see the gross, you know, not gross, but just the 4 years, 120. That's all you know. Like, wow, whew, that's a chunk of change. $77 million is nothing to sneeze at. But at that point, I think there's a way you could structure the deal, if you did a deal with Nico, that would get you close. And I think in the end, to me, because of Nico's size, speed, and who the guy he's throwing the ball, I think Nico's 2024 and beyond can be higher and better than Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's my interpretation of it. I love Nico. I've always loved Nico. I just felt like the first couple of years, man, if he could have stayed healthy and had a little bit better quarterback play, maybe he does something a little bit different. But it's just hard to swallow that matzo ball of 4 years, 120 right off the bat. And then you think about it, okay, $77 million guaranteed. The cap's going to go up. It's going to continue to go up. What you're going to have, I think, at the end of the season is a decision to make between, okay, Stephon Diggs or Nico. I don't think you can do both. What can you do? And look, you can manage the cap, especially with CJ on his rookie deal, but you're going to eventually have to pay Tank too if Tank develops like we think he's going to. So you just got to make sure that whatever deal you give, I think Nico ends up being the guy that I saw against the Colts. I saw him throughout the season at 2023, but maybe not even at that point. That guy is, I think, worth a contract of this ilk. Maybe not exactly, but I think he's worth that ilk. And I think that that Nico Collins, you're going to get more and more often. And that guy is going to be able to change games for this team going forward. So I think more time with CJ, he's going to get these receivers paid and then eventually get CJ paid. So you got to be ready for all of that. And hopefully they're having talks and they're discussing this and trying to, you know, come to something now. So Nico's not playing this year on a 1-year deal, but if he is, I mean, that's the business of football. We've seen that before. A lot of Texans have done it, had successful years, and then it sucked when we lost them, you know, but okay, let's move on. I mean, we've seen Nick move on in a way that was pretty striking, but I think my gut tells me that going into 2025, they'll still have Tank. They'll have one of Diggs and Nico, and then hopefully a draft pick, Mechie, Hutchinson, one of those other guys steps up to become that good, solid number three.
Yeah. Yeah. Mechie. Although I liked what CJ was saying about Mechie at his press conference, right? You know?
Yep. Absolutely. That was music to everyone's ears.
Yeah.
It made everybody perk up. And I said this to Mark. I just asked a question. I said, do you think that Nick and the Texans will look at Mechie as kind of their 2024 draft pick? Mm. So they don't draft the receiver. And then I was like, I don't think it's the case. I just asked a question. And he agreed with me. But to know that you have Mechie potentially back to what he was really physically at 100%, you know, 2021 at Alabama, if you got that guy and you teamed him with all these guys, you're going to have a lot more decisions to make, which I like. I like Nick having a lot of decisions to make.
I do too. Johnny, Texan sideline reporter and then footballtakeover.com. And Abby, you mentioned too, you do a ton of stuff on the Texans website as well. You just got done doing stuff with Drew and you got all sorts of stuff. Lay it out for the people where they can find all your amazing content.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. It starts at footballtakeover.com. That's my site, CEO, founder. Subscribe to get my draft guide for free. It's easy to download, easy to get. If you want just the guide, there's a store button. You can click it there and get the guide for draft weekend and just have it because you can always reference back to it. Because I don't know how many times I reference back to my CJ Stroud write-up, which I wrote up in May of 2022, and I comped him to Joe Burrow. I'll tell you, here's a quick story, Sean. So when CJ wins the AFC Offensive Rookie of the Month, our guy Adam Cann, who kind of handles our content, he's like, hey, man, you think you could write an article about CJ? I was like, okay. So I kind of talked about CJ and what he's done, and I was like, hey, what did I think about him in my scouting report? So I sent an article, and I had in there my scouting report and my comp to Joe Burrow, and he wrote back, and he's like, hey, man, this is awesome. This is great. He said, hey, but I'm going to take out the part about Joe Burrow. And I was like, nah, okay. And now you look at it and go, which one would you rather have? I mean, it's a pretty good comp, and I did that in May of 22, so I feel good about that.
Yeah.
So I have comps in my draft guide for all 200-plus players.
Yeah.
And some of them are good, some of them not so great, but, you know, I put a lot of thought into that. I love having the comps. I think it helps people. Okay, who am I reading about? Oh, he comped him to this guy. Oh, okay.
Yeah, dude, 100%. 100%, yeah.
So I love doing that. So I've got that. Obviously, all my stuff with the Texans. We'll kick off the draft show at 6. All Access 6 to 7 on Sports Radio 610. That'll be with our radio crew on Thursday night. Take you all the way through the draft that night. Friday night, we'll have the draft party. Seth will be out with us, which will be great. Neva Avenidas, Houston. And then Saturday, I'm looking forward to, which I always do, you and I. Get to kick it with Cecil on Saturday. And that's going to be cool. Then Mark comes in, we close it down. And then I sleep on Sunday, I think. And move on at that point. So,
liar. Yeah. You're making fun of everybody's report cards on Sunday. That's what you do. You wake up, you get a nice cup of coffee, and you're like, these report cards are stupid.
You know what report card I'm going to do? I'm going to do one for, what is it? I'm going to do one for the 2021 draft.
Okay.
Go back and look at that. I like doing the report cards 3 years down the road. And, you know, with the report card with the Texans, I don't really have to do anything because they didn't draft anybody until the third round.
But they didn't. But I would say, like, considering where they were picking,
yeah,
they got a backup. They got a solid backup quarterback in Davis Mills. They got a possible Pro Bowl wide receiver in Nico Collins. Brevin Jordan, it seems to be, you know, we'll see what – I know you loved Brevin Jordan coming out of Miami.
He was a big fan.
He was pretty high up in your Harris 100, I remember. And he started to show some signs of life at the end of last year. You know, and then there was Garrett Wallow and Roy Lopez. That's what happened. Fifth and sixth. Garrett's still on the team. Roy Lopez is still kicking around.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So not too bad.
Here's who's not around.
Yeah.
The 2021 first round quarterbacks.
Yeah, no kidding. They're around, but they all have to hire real estate agents.
they've got different jerseys on it. That's crazy. Cause I thought that draft was good. The one I feel bad about missing, and now is Trey Lance. I just think Trey Lance has never got an opportunity, and then he got phased out, and now he's out. So, but I knew the Niners weren't trading up for Mac Jones. I was like, you seen that guy?
Yeah.
You're going to trade up for him?
Right.
Ah, hell no, man.
Right.
No. And it's kind of turned out that way. So, yeah. So footballtakeover.com, HoustonTexans.com, obviously. And then, you know, I love doing this, Shawnee. And you were like, hey, man, you come on the show in the morning and podcast. I was like, hell yeah. I'd do that every day if you asked me to.
Yeah. You know, my man.
But, you know, anytime for you, man. You know that. You know, I love you to death. And I'm proud to be on the show with you. I am so proud to see what you've been doing and what you have done with this. You know, we were handed kind of a matzo ball of you know what, and you've made the most of it, man. It's been incredible to watch you become the best host this city has seen, man.
Dude,
it's been
really, really cool. Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it that very much. You know that means a lot, Johnny. And you're my dude, man. Like you and I got started in this crazy game together, not knowing how the hell to turn a microphone on. And
yeah, exactly.
We're still kicking it, man. Don't like that. I always say, like, don't tell anybody that Johnny and I aren't trained to do this stuff. All right, don't tell anybody. We got them all fooled.
Yeah, still tricking them.
Yeah, still tricking them all these years. Yeah, Johnny, you're the best, man. Footballtakeover.com. Love you like a brother. And I will see you on Friday. I'll be at the draft party distracting you guys with my WWE championship belt over one shoulder and a drink in the other hand. So,
yeah, speaking of being blinded by light, that's going to be blinding us by the light, which is sweet as hell, by the way. I love that.
Dude,
that's so cool.
Hannah McNair made a beeline for it when she came up to the studio yesterday. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
She probably tried it on and probably was trying to wear it, sling it over her shoulder.
And I'll tell you exactly what happened, Johnny. Like, she and Cal were up in studio yesterday, as you know.
Yep.
And they were getting up there around 11. I was still hanging around up there. And I'm walking down the hall and she's standing in the lobby with a camera crew because the Texans are following the two of them around. Yep. And Cal was doing something. I don't know if he's parking the car or something. I have no idea. He and Omar were somewhere. And Hannah sees me and she's like, oh, open the door, open this. So I open the door. I let her in. First thing, where's the belt?
Where's the belt?
And so we walked down and it was in one of those side studios, right?
Yeah.
I had it stored in there. I was doing just working in there while In the Loop was doing their show. And she comes in, she grabs that belt, she whips that thing over her shoulder like she's been doing it for 20 years, and the cameras start clicking away, man. Like, she is just way too comfortable in this environment right now.
I'm telling you, if Dylan Lauby gets drafted, I think Nick Caserio is not the only one that's going to be excited about that. And if you don't know who Dylan Lauby is, go Combine Dylan Lauby.
DX.
Yeah,
DX, the crotch chop. Yeah.
Just do it. Just go look because – he would be a fun player if the Texans end up with him. But yeah, it's been awesome, man. Can't wait for this weekend. And obviously looking forward to seeing you on Friday and then doing some radio on Saturday at the studio.
Yeah, should be fun. Should be a whole lot of fun. That's the great John Harris, footballtakeover.com, HoustonTexans.com. Subscribe, rate, review. You guys know the drill. Appreciate everybody doing that. I may be back this weekend with some episodes after maybe a little emergency episode Saturday morning to rate what the Texans did on Friday and certainly probably a summary of the draft over the weekend. So stay tuned for all of that. Appreciate John Harris joining me here on the podcast. Appreciate all of you tuning in as well. Happy draft weekend, everybody. It is here. I'm Sean Pendergast for my producer, Anthony Irwin. We are out of time. We'll see all of you a little later on this weekend here on the Utopia Football Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.